Welcome inside 254. Let's close the office door and start the conversation. The talk around the table today is about the Department of Labor in the era of Trump. So we have a new labor secretary, Alexandra Acosta, and of course, Donald Trump's persistent desire to dismantle anything and everything that the Obama administration did. But my focus really is the fact that Donald Trump is not, he is not a workers' rights advocate, right? So he was elected on a groundswell of working people who think that he is going to help them improve their material lives by bringing more jobs, by improving salaries, by making things better. But what he has done, and I have three very specific examples that I want to make a connection for the listeners, where he is clearly showing that he does not care about working people, that he is not interested in upholding workers' rights. He is much more interested in benefiting corporations and their bottom lines and basically allowing corporations to not take responsibility when it comes to things like workers being exploited. So the first story is from Forbes.
Again.
I love going to Forbes. I just like, because it's, again, it's that economic anxiety lens. This is, so the people who support him, this is their publication. So Forbes, the headline was Trump administration walks back labor protections and reinsulates big companies. So this is kind of a complicated issue, but I'm hoping to be able to explain it in a way that everybody can understand. Under the Obama administration, I'm going to use the example of the companies Uber and Lyft, where we have people, regular folks, just picking up driving opportunities, you know, to drive people around, like independent.
The sharing economy, right? I got a car, right. People need to get somewhere.
Right. So in this sharing economy, we have big corporations. And again, this example, there's many more examples. In fact, in this Forbes article, it's very detailed. There are many examples that are given. So the idea is you work for Uber as an independent employee. What happens if there's a labor law violation? What happens if there's a workman's compensation requirement or a wage theft or unsafe work environment, right? Things that labor law traditionally sort of helps with and protects. The drivers created a big stink and said, hey, you know, the company has to take some responsibility. And the companies said, no, we don't. But under the Obama administration, his Department of Labor came back and said, actually, yeah, you do. And we're going to call it joint employment.
So that's a brand new term. It's different than an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. Joint employment is something that was a response to sharing economies.
Right. And it's obviously not just Uber and Lyft, because there's a lot of these sharing economy companies. But the problem was that a company wanted to claim that it wasn't an employer and yet desired to maintain a lot of control over a lot of control that an employer would traditionally have. So the Obama administration's Department of Labor said, no, you're going to have to share responsibility. When there are problems, you are equally now responsible to the person who is in that sort of independent employee position.
And that makes sense, because the person who's driving for Uber doesn't get all the money. Uber gets some of the money. Right. So it sounds like what the Obama administration was saying was, well, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Like, you are going to have some responsibility or skin in the game if you are going to get money from this transaction.
Right. So that seemed to sort of,
seems to make sense to me.
It makes sense. It sort of, we'll say, fixed the problem, as it were, sort of at least addressed it, went in the direction to say, yep, the companies have to share responsibility. But
so what is that term again? Joint employer.
So it's joint employer.
So that's a new thing, right? This is a new shift in labor law and conversation. So we all need to know what this is.
Yeah. Trump's Department of Labor, with Alexandra Acosta at the head, has effectively, this is the Forbes article again, quote, has effectively declared open season on challengers of the indirect structures that increasingly benefit large employers and allow them to more freely act as direct employers but avoid responsibility. So what he wants the Department of Labor to do now is to withdraw that joint employer.
So he's erased the concept.
He's erased the concept. Okay. So we had it briefly it seemed to be fixing things in the right direction. And now we're back to the way it was, where now those independent employees truly are floating out there on their own with no responsibility shared by the company.
But that's also bad for the consumer.
It is.
That think about could that. Create dangerous situations. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any regulation. Yep.
What the driver in the case of an Uber or Lyft driver takes full responsibility, full liability, everything, right? There's no backing. There's no
right.
company backing that person up.
So when that Uber car gets into an accident, it's just like that dude's car mm-hmm. insurance. Mm-hmm. So the insurance industry is going to have to bear the brunt of it. And like Uber has no responsibility, but gets to make all the money.
Mm-hmm. So that's a problem. And then on the other side of that, with union rights, workers' rights, jobs related to
jobs,
who's responsible for the jobs, who's paying for them, who's working it. Okay.
Who's creating them.
So we go from the job sharing, the sharing economy corporations to more traditional corporations like Carrier in Indianapolis. On the campaign trail, Trump promised that all of those jobs that Carrier wanted to take to Mexico were going to stay. But in actuality, only about 700 of the union jobs are going to stay, and the rest of them are going to be sent to Mexico. Now, Carrier has said that it will, I believe that it's going to try and place those people, but that means people have to move, right? Take money out of their own pockets to move.
And are probably going to move to states that don't have labor laws. Like my family almost moved. My dad worked at Mack Trucks, and Pennsylvania has strong labor laws. And they were moving to South Carolina, and my family took a trip. Like, we visited the schools, we looked, because to move to Winnsboro, South Carolina was going to bust the union.
Mm-hmm. And that's a right to work state.
And we didn't, right? But that was like a huge upheaval and decision in a family. Yeah. So these things are
happening now.
Happening, and they are hard.
And the president of the United Steelworkers Local 1999, Robert James, that he's quoted in this CNBC piece talking about the Carrier deal, quote, "The jobs are still leaving. Nothing has stopped." Union officials say they've heard nothing from the company about any job offers elsewhere within the company. So the rumor is that there will be offers, but the union hasn't heard anything substantial about that. Mm. So again, it might just be we're saying the right thing, but we're not actually going to follow through. And this is a direct connection to Trump made these promises about Carrier specifically.
Right. And I hope for those families that it does come to fruition. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Trump can do some magic and save you, I mean, this is that back, we're back to the structural versus the individual. If you don't change the structural issue, none of this is going to change. But for those families, those individual families, the waving of the magic wand will benefit. Mm-hmm. So that's good. You know, I want those families to have jobs.
Yep.
But I also want bigger change to happen so that it's not just requiring the weird waving of a magic wand or a threat, I'm guessing, mm-hmm. Behind a closed door. I want there to be this kind of sustainable march toward safety and toward stability.
And stability includes financial stability. So again, all of these stories I'm bringing up are connected. Who's creating the jobs? Who's doing the jobs? Whose rights take precedence? And so far, the rights are all on the side of the corporations. One final example. This is a story from NPR at the end of June.
Hashtag fake news.
Right. Labor Department rethinking Obama era overtime payroll. So this is another in a cornerstone policy of the Obama administration that the Trump administration simply wants to dismantle, again, without thinking about the impact it's going to have on middle class and working class families. The idea behind this rule, this overtime rule, was that middle class jobs should pay middle class wages, right? I think something everybody can get behind. And even Trump sort of campaigned on this idea that he's all about helping, right, the working class and the middle class. Okay. The rule said that anyone, this is Obama's administration's rule, anyone making less than $47,476 a year would be eligible for time and a half pay for hours worked beyond the 40-hour work week, which would double the previous salary threshold for that overtime payroll.
Oh, I was going to say, because how's that different than... Okay, so it doubled. So it was basically honoring that like $47,000 is still relatively low. And I know that's above the median income.
But okay,
so
if you
made the number higher.
That,
right. So it gave more people the opportunity to actually earn what they should in overtime. Okay.
So
people weren't guaranteed overtime?
No. unless you made...
There was a salary threshold?
There was a salary threshold.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that rule doubled the salary threshold so that people
it,
who...
So it increased the number of people.
It increased the number of people by quite a bit. Okay. Well, to no one's surprise, I think, 21 states plus a bunch of business groups sued.
I'm sure the Chamber of Commerce was not happy with that.
Saying that the move amounted to federal overreach and would burden the public and private sector. So... A federal judge did ultimately agree, blocked the implementation of the policy about a week before it was supposed to go into effect on December 1st, 2016. This administration has said, so Labor Secretary Alexandra Acosta said that he wants to try and amend the rule, lowering the salary threshold. So here's what I'm expecting to see happen.
He wants to take it back. Okay.
He's going to take it back. Now, is he going to take it back to the threshold it was before? Or is he just going to drop it down to maybe 30,000?
Right, like a middle ground.
Like a middle ground. But either way, that's a slap in the face, again, of the middle class. This administration doesn't really care about working people. And yet it got elected on that promise.
Because we're talking about people who are working more than 40 hours a week.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're talking about people who are... sweating. Like, I remember my mom used to call it making gravy when my dad would stay late and do overtime, and I literally thought my dad left Mack truck and went to like a gravy factory for a really long time. Oh. But like, these are people who are making gravy, right? Like, these are people who have already worked their 8-hour day on their feet most of the time and who are staying more time so they can support their families. And these are the people that we're trying to get rich off the backs of. I mean, let's be honest, that this is what this is about. This is very clearly about who's walking away with the money that is made from labor.
Yeah. And it is the corporations and I guess the attorneys fighting for them and the lobbyists on their side.
Ain't nobody going to get a Mar-a-Lago just because they're getting overtime pay at their 40-hour week job. Let's be really clear about this.
That's not going to happen. It might be the difference between, say, a working class family who can afford to go
on vacation.
Go to the shore for 5 days.
Exactly.
Or not. I mean, that's the gravy, right? That's the little bit of extra that might make a little bit of leisure time and fun with the family possible.
And after the person or the two people were working 45, 50-hour work weeks for 50 years, for 50 weeks out of the year.
I wish more people could see the connection. When his administration is making these changes, his Department of Labor, Trump's Department of Labor, is going to make these changes to make working class people's lives harder in very material ways. And he is supporting and propping up corporations and their right to make a lot more money off of the backs of their working class employees. It's so wrong on so many levels. And I just really want people to understand that this really matters. That when we say workers' rights, it's not just, oh, you know, the union. No, this is even these people who aren't in a union, they're getting screwed by this guy and his people in the administration, and corporations are going to walk away scot-free. And the people, again, the people who voted for him on this promise are going to get screwed again.
Again. It's really hard to reconcile sometimes. I know, I can see it in your face. But it is, it's very, it's not that I know what is better for somebody than they know, but like, I can understand policy, and I don't see how this policy is going to benefit, how rolling back these protections is going to benefit anyone other than people, if you think about a pyramid, the people at the top who are going to make money off the backs of other people's labor and then not ensure that those people can make an honest and fair living. It's so basic and so American to me. Like, to me, that is so incredibly American. That's what I think about.
We talk about bootstraps, right? That's part of our American mythology as well. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Okay, well, if you take the person's bootstraps away from them, the bootstraps might be overtime.
Right. Right.
You take the bootstraps, what are you left with?
Or that little, I teach so many returning adult students, right? Maybe that gravy is so that they can send themselves or their kids to school. And so maybe that they won't have to be in a job that's an hourly wage.
I'm looking to see how the labor unions, the big labor unions, the labor movement that still hasn't necessarily been weakened completely, but how labor unions are going to respond to this kind of push. I'm hoping that we respond strongly and with lobbyists and with money and with Democratic backing.
At this point, we have no choice.
Yeah.
At this point, there is no choice. If we're going to ensure workers' rights and the safety and the security, financial and physical, of these people, including my family, we're going to have to start throwing some money at it, unfortunately, mm-hmm. which is really frustrating because I know there's things these groups mm-hmm. would rather do with their money.
And selling it. The Democratic Party, the progressive left, we need to do a better job educating people about what the fuck is actually going on here, what he's trying to do, why it hurts the people who voted for him, and convince them. We have to do a better job selling that idea and getting people to see it more clearly.
I think that job is going to get harder and harder as Donald Trump has convinced people that anything that we say is fake. That's another episode, but it's really going to be, it's going to get really, he's no dummy, right? Like he's creating distrust of people mm-hmm. who are trying to explain this stuff.
Well, we are going to keep explaining
it. Yes, we are. That's why we're here.
So keep listening. Thanks. Thanks, everybody.
Like what you're hearing? Hey, Podbean listeners, see that green Become a Patron button at the top right of your screen? You can click on that, donate $1 a month, and get a cool sticker, a Facebook shout out, and our undying gratitude. iTunes listeners, we didn't forget about you. If you go to our Facebook page, you'll see a blue Shop Now button. Click that button, and it'll get you to that same site. Thanks for keeping us sustainable.
Time for Trumpster, Trumpster Fire.
Amanda?
Yes?
We need to talk about Donald Trump's relationship to the press. So I teach world literature. So I spend a lot of time knowing what authors around the world are enduring, knowing if they're being censored or imprisoned. And I look to Penn America and Penn International, who is this leading organization fighting for the rights of writers. And I will say that when Penn America has to make a statement about the American president,
so bad.
It's really so bad. And I cannot impress upon my listeners how bad that is, because Penn America is usually talking about dictatorships and talking about the writers who are being jailed or tortured or imprisoned by writing their stories and by writing their truths.
And so they've come out with a statement.
So Susan, Suzanne Nossel, who's the Penn America executive director, had to put out a statement after Donald Trump tweeted. I mean, it's just mind boggling that I can't even believe I'm about to say this sentence. Tweeted a video from an archive of when he wrestled, and then they put CNN on the head of somebody that our now president was beating up during a WWE event. I think it was WWE.
Yeah, and I think that was Vince McMahon. So they put the CNN logo on Vince.
And here's
my
other question. Sidebar, did my tax dollars go toward making a dumbass video? Because I don't know how to do that. So I know Donald Trump didn't. So did he like tell somebody on his staff to spend their time? Like,
probably.
I'm furious if my tax dollars went to that, yeah. Wagging my finger. But anyway.
No, I think that's probably what happened.
I don't know how to do that. So I know he doesn't know how mm-hmm. to do it. So anyway, whoever paid for that video, I want my money back. So anyway, Suzanne Nossel wrote, "While we have grown sadly accustomed to Donald Trump's vicious, ill-informed, and sometimes lewd attacks on journalists and the media, the posting then dashed out, I love this, by the president of the United States, of a video depicting Donald Trump tackling and punching an individual whose head has been replaced with the CNN logo marks a new low. With this latest posting, it's impossible to conclude anything other than that the president is valorizing and modeling brutal physical attacks on journalists. Even the world's worst authoritarian regimes..." I can't even believe I'm reading this.
Leaders, in context with an American president.
It's unbelievable to me that leaders tend to mask their assaults on journalists by working through anonymous thugs or under a cover of night. And that's usually what Penn is covering, right? Like, so Penn is covering, like, this writer who was kind of dragged out of his home in the middle of the night and tortured. Donald Trump seems to feel no such compunction. His brazen approbation of violence is unprecedented by the president of the United States and signals a dangerous assault on the public's right to know and on the role of the media in vindicating that right. That's such an important sentence. And I think that's why so many of us feel like we're screaming into a canyon, because we're like, please look. I almost feel like I'm begging people at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, please, will you please look around? Can you just, like, stop with your Make America Great and your other, like, cliches for, like, 2 minutes and let me try to contextualize this for you. Anna Navarro, who's a reporter for CNN, wrote, "I'm a CNN commentator. I think that is unacceptable. I think that is the president of the United States taking things way too far. Again, I want to know who paid for that video. Yep. It is an incitement to violence. He is going to get somebody killed in the media. Maybe that will stop him." And then she later added, "The president of the United States is inciting violence against the free press and America, and we cannot stand for it." So, Amanda,
I want to get academic on you for a second.
Go for it.
We're talking about the incitement of violence, where you can't really identify the individual that's going to commit the violence, but you're inciting violence nonetheless.
And then the person inciting it gets to put his hands up and go, "Well, I didn't do it.
I don't know.
I wasn't holding that gun.
What are you talking about?" Right. Okay, it's called stochastic terrorism.
That's a fancy word,
isn't it? That's probably going to make people's heads explode, but just bear with me for a second.
S-T-O-C-H-A-S-T-I-C.
Yes, it is.
For anybody who's Googling that right now.
Yeah. I was looking
at... all rhetorical. Be the rhetorician.
I'm going to be the rhetorician. I'm going to be the academic rhetorician, so bear with me, folks. So a law professor, David Cohen, he was writing in Rolling Stone actually last August, so prior to Trump's election. Remember when Trump went to one of his many rallies. It was in North Carolina. He expressed concern about Hillary Clinton being elected and picking Supreme Court justices, and he said...
And then he made that funny joke about getting her assassinated.
Yeah. So he said, quote, just to remind people, if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know.
And then you get to put your shoulders up and go, oh, I'm so cute. I'm not really saying anything.
So here's the thing. This is what this law professor was writing. It's irrelevant what Trump actually meant, because enough people here will hear Trump's comments and think that he's calling for people to take up arms against Clinton, her judges, or both.
Okay? Very similar to that NRA video that was just made. Same concept. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole right now, but it's the same idea.
It's the same idea.
We can apply it.
Okay. You're making sort of these, what seem to be these off-the-cuff, throw-aside comments that seem to suggest violence. And this is what David Cohen writes. What Trump did is engage in so-called stochastic terrorism. It's an obscure and non-legal term that has occasionally been discussed in the academic world for the past decade and a half, and it applies with precision here. And here's where I wanted to draw the connection to the inciting violence against journalists. I think this is what he's doing. He's doing this across the board, and he's letting his administration officials and his supporters do the same.
And he's doing it on his Twitter feed. He talks about the journalists more than he talks about anything else Twitter.
So stochastic terrorism, it was described by a blogger who summarized the concept several years back, means using language and other forms of communication to incite random actors to carry out violent or terrorist acts that are statistically predictable, but individually unpredictable. Mm. So you can't predict that any one particular individual will follow Trump's call to use violence against, say, Clinton or her judges or journalists or an individual in one of his rallies. So that's statistically impossible to predict. But what we can predict, Cohen writes, there could be presently an unknown lone wolf who hears his call, hears the implication, and then takes action in the future. Cohen isn't drawing the connection to the journalists.
Like,
I am
creating a climate of something. Okay.
So he puts the dog whistle out. Trump puts the dog whistle out, knowing a dog out there is going to hear it, even though he doesn't know which dog. I thought the way Cohen described that was perfect, because that's exactly, I think, what we're seeing.
I like that.
Yeah. It's a dog whistle. He doesn't know which dog, but he knows there's a dog out there that's going to hear it.
So it's randomly determined.
Right.
I was just playing with that word. Which makes it
extra scary. Because he's done, and he it also gives Trump the ability to deny it, right? Like you just said, you put, well, I don't know.
I didn't tell that person to do that.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't a direct order, but he implies it, and he knows, like, the dog whistle of implication. Some dog out there is going to hear it and act on it. We don't know which dog, but there's a dog that will.
And it only takes one dog.
Only takes one dog.
That's a really useful term.
It is.
I appreciate that you found that for us. So stochastic.
Stochastic terrorism.
Stochastic means randomly determined.
It's a rhetorical strategy.
Right.
It actually mirrors the way that extremists incite violence among their followers.
I was just thinking about ISIS.
Do you remember?
When you said that, I was just thinking about ISIS and like these people who are like ISIS inspired, mm-hmm. but not actually connected to ISIS. It's that same kind of idea.
And I'm going
to
close the circle here and say, do you remember Greg Janfort in Montana in May? Special election for the congressional seat, and his attack on the Guardian reporter, Ben Jacobs.
He beat him up.
Yeah. So this GOP's candidate, his attack on that actual journalist that he actually physically attacked is an extension of Trump's violent anti-media rhetoric, which we can now call it stochastic terrorism.
Yeah, I'm glad we have a term for that now. Mm-hmm. It's like gaslighting was really useful earlier on in the election. So this I think we can attach to this term. And I think having language for what we're feeling, we've been using all these terms like we can't explain. Mm-hmm. But now I think it gives me a way to talk about why that kind of dog whistle thing really matters.
Mm-hmm.
If you take nothing away from this Trumpster fire, the idea of blowing a dog whistle, having no idea which dog is going to actually respond, but knowing that one probably will, and it's randomly determined, mm-hmm. is so helpful when we hear language like that, because mm-hmm. the shrugging of the shoulders and saying, well, it was like when Sarah Palin was promoting all that, like putting like firearms and bullets and mm-hmm. things on her. And then Gabby Giffords, you know, people were trying to make that connection and everybody's like, but Sarah Palin didn't say to do that. I'm like, yeah. Or that crazy guy mm-hmm. that went to the pizza shop that was convinced that like Hillary Clinton was running a sex scandal ring mm-hmm. in the pizza shop. You know, it just has to land on one person.
Yep.
And that's why I think you and I are always trying to teach people to be really careful with their language mm-hmm. and teach them that language matters. And then there's these other folks who are like so fast and loose with their language as if it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But this concept of stochastic terror, right?
As a rhetorical strategy.
Yeah, that's going to be really helpful.
That has physical, tangible consequences to actual people.
Right. I mean, the people in the press are really kind of saying, well, it feels like it's only a matter of time now.
One final thought to take away. Journalists are workers.
Yes, thank you.
Journalists are workers doing the work of the American people. Whether you agree with them or not, they are hardworking individuals whose job it is to hold any administration or government structure accountable to the American people. And we now have a president who is attacking the workers whose job it is to hold him accountable. You got to think about that.
Yeah. That guy that punched the journalist, I mean, the journalist just asked a question about healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't asking a question like, did you have an affair with somebody? It was just like, so what's going on with the healthcare policy? And he got attacked for it.
Yes, he did.
And then now I know that a lot of the ballots were already sent in. So I don't know if people would have taken back mm-hmm. their vote. But then got elected in. Mm-hmm. So elected what that in. Does is that legitimizes the actions that this person took.
That result from stochastic terrorism.
Oh,
that's an action.
I feel like I'm going to make a whole class on that.
Yeah. And I think using the language and calling things what they are is important.
I think you gave us all a beautiful gift today. Gave us some language for something that we've all been feeling.
Let's take a time out for a media minute.
If you're not angry, you're not paying attention. That's the tagline and guiding principle behind Raging Chicken Press, a quote, left progressive media site devoted to covering and helping build on-the-ground activism and communities of resistance, end quote. Founded in 2011 by our colleague and friend Kevin Mahoney, this site and their Out the Coop podcast provides insights, analysis, facts, and smart perspectives on current news and labor activism, especially right here in Pennsylvania. And for me, as a progressive-leaning Democrat who often feels that social justice and union issues are really ignored in national mainstream media, I appreciate the existence of a site that makes me feel less alone. Recent headlines include Climate Denial Democrat Style, Pennsylvania Senator toured Range Resources just before proposing legislation targeting pipeline and anti-fracking protesters, and President Trump and his love affair with a little blue bird. I also learn a lot by listening to their podcast, because they frequently talk about issues that just aren't reported on, even in our local media. Recent episodes covered the fantasy politics of the right, tactics of resistance, killing healthcare, universal basic income, anti-fascists, and the Pennsylvania Student Power Network. Go to RagingChickenPress.org to check out the smart writing and click on the Raging Chicken Radio tab to listen to Out to Coop. If you care about progressive issues in this troubled world and are craving a more progressive lens through which to understand news coming out of Washington and right here in our Southeast Pennsylvania backyards, then you will appreciate Kevin and his team's reporting and analysis.
Let's end today's podcast with some activist actions.
If the labor movement is going to survive, it is going to need to expand. I love the labor movement because I see collective action and organizing as key pillars of my feminism. Labor rights are connected to gender rights, are connected to race rights, are connected to, you get my picture. Trying to make capitalism a space where everyone can survive requires a labor movement. Jonathan Tim argues in The Atlantic that millennials can save the unions, so my activist action is for all of our millennial listeners. Organize yourselves. You deserve fair working conditions. And you deserve to earn money from your labor and not just make money for people higher up on the pyramid of capitalism. Talk with your coworkers safely. Even though laws allow you to organize, you can be fired for something else. Read about organizing and social media. If labor movements are going to remain as guardians of the working class, you, dear millennial listener, are going to have to participate. I promise you, it is for your own good. Thanks for spending time with us inside 254. You can find us a lot of places online. You can follow us on Facebook at Inside 254 Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Inside 254 Pod. Instagram, we're at Inside 254. And we're online, where we put links and more information from each episode at inside254site.wordpress.com. You can follow us on Podbean, and please rate us on iTunes. Thanks for spending time with us this episode of Inside 254.